compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, hello there. Thanks for tuning into the Patrick Madrid Show. Let's start with my phone number, 888-914-9149. I give that number out in just all the time. And if you are a regular listener to the program, you already know it by heart. But just in case, 888-914-9149. I understand there's a young man named Lucas in studio who has a question for me. Hello, Lucas.
Hi, Patrick. Yeah, I did. I had a question. So if you're listening and you went to Mass yesterday, if you're like me, maybe you were wondering, from the first reading, there's a reading from 1 Timothy, and it talks about one who aspires to the office of bishop desires a noble task. And it talks about them being married only once. And it further goes on to list the qualifications. And then it says, for if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how can he take care of the church of God? And so I was wondering, as Catholics, how we can understand this scripture passage in light of the church's teaching on priestly celibacy.
Very good. Good question. Well, this is 1 Timothy chapter 3, I believe is the one you're thinking of. And in that passage, St. Paul is giving the description of what the qualities are to be a good bishop. Now, the second one that you mentioned, in other words, he has to have demonstrated that he knows how to run his household and there's good order and people are, you know, living in harmony, because that, of course, is a key ingredient for anyone, any man who wants to be a bishop. You don't want chaos and anarchy. There in verse 2, it says something that I think is what throws you. Now, a bishop must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, sensible, dignified, hospitable, and an apt teacher. Not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, and not a lover of money. He must manage his own household well, keeping his children submissive and respectful in every way. For if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how can he care for God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may be puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, or he may fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And then it gets into deacons. But it's that one phrase, the husband of one wife. So here's how to understand that. Many people, let's say in the Protestant world, they misunderstand this to mean it's a command that he must be married, that he must have a wife. And that's exactly the opposite of what this is saying. This is saying that if he is married, that he didn't get remarried after his first wife died, if she did die. Because in the early church, there was a great deal of, not opprobrium, but it was looked upon with a critical eye if a man or a woman remarried after marriage, after the spouse had died. It wasn't forbidden. I mean, it was permitted under God's law. So it wasn't as though if, you know, his wife dies and he gets remarried, he wasn't committing a sin, but it was looked upon as he's not that strong. You know, he's not that into the faith, and he needs these physical consolations. And they would look at that as though, you know, you're not committing a sin, but you're also not really striving for the ideal. So in this passage, it's referring to that. So if a man's wife had died and he remarried, he would not be considered to be a bishop, because it would be considered a kind of, in their eyes anyway, a kind of weakness or concession to the flesh. So that's what it's referring to. Now, as for the church's discipline on priestly celibacy, it was still evolving. And this, of course, is, you know, the very first century. The apostles were still alive. Some of the apostles themselves were married. So there's a question about, did they maintain any kind of relationship with their wives? St. Peter, for example. We don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us. But we do have documentary evidence that as time went on, that the movement more in the direction of celibacy for the clergy was seen as the ideal, following Christ, emulating him, emulating St. Paul, emulating those apostles who, it seems, left everything, including their wives and their children, to follow Jesus. And that wasn't a hard and fast requirement in the early centuries, which is why you will see married bishops and married priests and married deacons. That actually did happen. But eventually, over time, it became seen more and more as an ideal to follow, so that when men freely chose to be to be considered for the priesthood, they freely renounced marriage for the sake of the kingdom, as Jesus talks about in Matthew chapter 19. So it was gradual, and that's the direction that it headed in, which is why, to come back to your question, Lucas, this passage, it tells us something about the strictness that they had early on, but it's not in conflict with this discipline of priestly celibacy, because the discipline hadn't been really in any systematic way imposed. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, as you were explaining that, I was reminded of the fact that this is one thing I love about the Catholic faith. I am a convert myself. And how you were explaining the historical context as well as the Catholic approach of a more holistic approach to the reading of Scripture rather than just single verses really helps clarify and bring to light the Church's teaching. So,
well, I'm happy to hear
thank
that.
You thank for you. That. I appreciate it.
And if I haven't welcomed you home to the Catholic Church before today, Lucas, let me do so now. Welcome home.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this coming November actually will be my second year in the church, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Oh, I can imagine. That's exciting. You're going to throw a big party?
We'll see. Who knows? Maybe I'll get Cyrus to pull some strings or something like that.
I think Cyrus should donate his house for the occasion. Maybe.
You know what? I like that idea.
Have a big party there.
Yeah.
There's more to Lucas's story, and I don't know if he's ever shared this with you, and I'll let Lucas tell it, but why don't you tell him what you told me?
Yeah, okay, so actually this is when I was still a Protestant about 2 years ago. I was actually living outside of Sacramento at the time, and I was kind of exploring the Catholic faith secretly, of course, because I couldn't let anyone know that I was looking
you
into...
You might get angry.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And I happened to turn on the radio, and I heard your show on the radio, the Patrick McDrid Show. And I was like, well, this is interesting. This is kind of cool, you know, learn stuff about the faith, and it's very different than everything else that's on the radio, which is kind of refreshing.
Thank you.
And so I would turn it on and listen to it, and found it to be super helpful. And actually, I believe Kaylin was still working on the show at that time as well. And it's funny, 2 years later now, here I am in Green Bay. And
I
now,
didn't know that part of the story. That's marvelous.
Yeah, so it's funny how God works.
Now, did you start working at our Sacramento studios?
I did not, no. But if, didn't live too far from there.
You're from Sacramento, right?
Originally Oregon, but I did spend some time down in the Bay Area in Northern California.
If you haven't done this yet, the next time you go back to Sacramento, be sure to stop into our studios there and meet everybody. They'd love to meet you.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. I'd love to do that sometime.
Yeah, yeah, great crew over there. Shout out to all of our Sacramento staff. They know who they are. Hopefully they're all listening right now. But yeah, it's a great crew, and they'll treat you right when you go over there. They'll feed you well, too.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, they love it. Patrick's making promises that we may not be able to keep. No, you'll like it.
We feed them and treat them right here, too.
That's true. Well, I mean, you'd expect that from the mothership. I mean, that's an assumption, right?
But I've heard some wonderful things about Sacramento.
Yeah, it's a great place. Beautiful chapel, too. So anyway, well, thank you, Lucas and Cyrus, for filling me in on that very important detail. What a beautiful thing that listening to Relevant Radio was the catalyst that eventually led him to you, Lucas, to actually working here at Relevant Radio. That's really neat.